Welcome to Sports Talk with Tonsoni, the Indiana Baseball Edition. I'm your host, Brian Tonsoni, and along with Chris Feeney, Josh Bennett, Cassidy Palmer, and Carl James, we will be bringing you information on Indiana baseball. Hope you enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Talking Hoosier Baseball. I'm your host, Brian Tonsoni. Before we get to the show today, on behalf of everyone at iubase.com and Talking Hoosier Baseball, we give out our deepest sympathies to the city and school in Noblesville, Indiana, with the unfortunate incident today at their school. We hope all a quick and speedy recovery, and we hope at some time maybe sports and shows like this can help ease the tragedy today. So we're thinking about you. And now on to the show. Every good sports program has a voice that fans look to for excitement and comfort. At Indiana, we have some great voices. Don Fisher comes to mind. He's awesome. However, the Indiana baseball program has a great voice of their own. Talking Hoosier Baseball and iubase.com is honored to talk with the voice of Indiana baseball, the man for which we all mute the television to sync the radio call to the action. Please welcome Greg Murray. Greg, thanks for being with us from Omaha today. How are things out west?
Things are good. I appreciate you having me here on the program. Things are good. It's Friday, so we're still here. So that's first and foremost a positive note after things turned around pretty quickly yesterday in round two. But Omaha's great. It's the capital of college baseball, TD Ameritrade Park. It doesn't get any better than that. And we'll be here for the Big Ten tournament for the next, I believe, 5 or 6 years. It's good to be back. As fun as it was last year in Bloomington, it's good to be back at TD Ameritrade Park. And it's fun, competitive baseball. Even when Indiana hasn't been playing, I've been able to walk over to the ballpark and just watch a whole lot of Big Ten baseball this week. And couldn't ask for anything else.
That sounds like a lot of fun. I've been to Omaha a couple times for the College World Series, and it's a great atmosphere. And I'm sure that the Big Ten is representing well out in Omaha. So we just appreciate you being on the show. We've been fans for a long time. As long as you've been broadcasting, we appreciate the work that you do and try to want to delve into the greatness that is Greg Murray. So if you could share a little bit about how you became an IU sports announcer and the teams for Indiana that you cover.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I guess I'll start it. I graduated from Indiana as a student back in 2013, and while I was there, I got into the student radio side of things and started to cover IU athletics in that way. And from there, in graduating, I was able to do a couple of different sports, including some IU baseball games over at Sembauer Field. And my senior year was the first year that Bart Kaufman Field opened up, but I left school a little bit early. And went into minor league baseball for a year with the New York Mets organization, did 1 year as a seasonal internship there in their double-A level. And then following that season, got job searching, came back home. I live originally from the Indianapolis area on the north side up at Fishers. And so was there for a little bit back home and then job searching. And after a little while, this opportunity in Bloomington came about. So I moved back down to Bloomington, and this is my fifth IU baseball season. I started in 2014, was my first year, and I do IU women's basketball, the play-by-play on the radio for them during the wintertime. I've just wrapped up my fourth season doing IU women's hoops, and then doing some various other things with IU athletics, radio, interview, and media side of things, and it's something new every season. It's part of the perks of the job, but year five right now, coming down to the wire for IU baseball.
And so when did you know that this is something that broadcasting was something that you wanted to get into? And how did you know that?
Well, growing up, I was played a few different sports, but baseball was kind of my primary sport, I guess, my favorite sport playing growing up. And I was a very average to subpar player in high school. Wasn't all that great. And I think about halfway through, it kind of dawned on me that I was not going to be able to play at the collegiate level. And then obviously professionally after that, I just kind of recognized, I'm not all that great at this whole playing thing. And after a while and getting some opportunities of doing some media things, and even in high school a little bit, but more so once I got to Bloomington and IU, that gave me the opportunity to start talking about sports and broadcasting sports and things like that. And I enjoyed it, thought I was pretty decent at it to get things started, and then different opportunities opened themselves up, and one thing led to another, and just figured if I can't play sports, why not try and talk about it?
Well, and, you know, we really appreciate that you do multiple sports, but that carryover between women's basketball and baseball allows Roger to yell into his phone, and it also gives us some enjoyment with his screaming and yelling, but we're glad when you get back to baseball full time. But what's a typical game day look like for you, home or more likely at home? How do you get ready to broadcast a game?
Typical game day, I guess, I try and get there two and a half hours before a game, especially for a series opener or the first game, a midweek, something like that, where I'll come in and got to set up all the equipment and make sure everything works and then doing the basics that way. So I try and get there early just in case something, you know, I've forgotten things at home before. And if I get there early enough, well, I can go back home and figure it all out. So it gives you time to kind of make sure everything will work and go on the air as I'm supposed to. And you know, I'll jot down the lineup card an hour and a half first pitch and make my final player notes and just make sure everything, stats and everything's where I want it to be for when the game starts. And then once that's all set up and I'm ready to do the game, if I have some time to kill, maybe I'll bounce down to the field during batting practice or something like that and talk with some of the coaches, talk with the guys, and see if there's any extra, you know, little tidbits, stories, trends, things like that. I'll talk to the opposing radio guy typically that can give me a little bit more information on maybe the other team and things like that. But it's something different every day, which so I'm not quite sure there's a typical game day, which again kind of adds to how much fun this is.
Well, on Saturdays at the BART, you could add, you know, stopping by for a little food at the iubase.com tailgate before you go in. So we'd like to add that to your Saturday game routine next season. But your play sheet card, would you say you're very detailed? Is it on the lineup card? Do you have a separate sheet? And how do you organize that so that you can watch the action and call some stats? To me, that would be an interesting part for me if I were to try to do that.
It's organized chaos, I would say. And I'm not sure, and I think I can speak for a lot of broadcasters that do this, but nobody truly, I don't think, does it the exact same way. Everybody will have their score sheet and things like that where you fill out the lineup card, obviously fill it in as it goes on to keep track of what's happening. But I have the season stats that are usually right above where I have my stat book, right in pretty easy eyesight, so I can, you know, find and reference something relatively quickly. I'll have a roster sheet next to me. I have my iPad that has a bunch of the live stats that's provided in the press box. And I'll have my computer next to me that I have the ability to look something up mid-game or maybe in between innings if I'm looking up something, check on scores and things like that. So I try and set everything up in a way that I know where everything is. So when you have a double, I know exactly how to quickly find how many doubles that they've hit this season, for instance. I can quickly look down and not really break the beat of a broadcast, if you will. And that's developed over time. I now know how I want everything to be set up, and it works for me. But again, everybody, I think, is a little bit different the way they set everything up.
Okay, so we have this stat guru on our crew, Cassidy Palmer, and yeah, she is just simply amazing. And when she was in Bloomington, she had like 19 different colored pencils, and it is amazing how detailed. So what little small tricks do you have on your scorecard, unless that's just a trade secret and you don't want to let that out? But how do you keep score during the game to know in the later innings how to refer back to plays and such?
You know, I do, similar to what you just said, is that I have a lot of different colored pens, and each pen will mean something different. Usually I reference it mainly with the different colors for if a different pitcher comes into the ball game, I'll create, you know, make a little slash at that point in the game, and that color references a certain pitcher. And so I can look back and say, okay, BJ Sable, he last pitched on Sunday and he came in, while I'm flipping my lineup card, I can look back and say, okay, I know he came in facing this batter with two outs in this inning. And so it's an easy reference for me. For one reason or another, I always use blue as the first pitcher or first sub off the bench, and then it goes green, purple, red. For whatever reason, that's the method of the madness that I've used. And I do the same thing with basketball. While I'm doing a women's basketball game, I try and keep track of points as the game goes on. And so with women's basketball being four quarters, I'll have a different color for the first, second, third, fourth quarter. And so I can look back and say, you know, Amanda Cahill had 9 points in the fourth quarter, but she's got 15 for the game. And so again, it's just going through different references but different colored pens, I think, is kind of what makes me more unique maybe than others.
You brought up women's basketball. Is basketball with the flow of the game versus baseball's flow, which one is easier, or do they each have their own separate difficulties?
They most certainly have their a different set of difficulties, I would say. Baseball is much more conversational. Obviously, it's a slower pace and just takes up more time. Your typical 2.5-3 hour game, possibly up to 4.5 hours. We've had, I think, a couple of times this year going to 13, 14 innings, which make it for quite long days at the ballpark, but a lot more conversation. And I can almost play more as the analyst, play-by-play guy, all into one, doing the broadcast by myself. Whereas basketball, there's just not as much time to dive into the analysis of what happened. I can much more focus on what exactly happened on the play, and then by the time I'm finished describing that, there's already a play happening at the other end. So it just, the pace of it is a lot quicker, which I think makes it easier broadcasting by yourself. But baseball, again, is more conversational. I guess if we're talking difficulty, maybe baseball, just because of that fact. But they're both a lot of fun and have their own challenges.
Okay, so you're on a long road trip out there, hopefully a lot longer. We don't want to see you back in Bloomington, nothing personal, until late Sunday night. Yeah. But what do you do in between games on these road trips?
Well, depending on the day and truly in a situation like this, depending what time the game is the next day, or if we have to play later that day, like what could happen if the Hoosiers win on Friday night, having to play two potentially on Saturday. A lot of times it's a quick, got to hurry home and get to bed. That's what we had to do on Wednesday night, playing into the wee hours of the morning. And then after losing, you had to play at then 1 o'clock the next day. So you tried to get a little bit of rest. But then after you win against Michigan State, we got about 30 to 36 hours or so before you play again. So a little bit of time to walk around and see the towns. And I think that's it's a perk of the job, traveling through Big Ten country and things like that. If we're staying in the hotel, if it's close to campus or something like that, we'll take some time maybe, and I'll go on a morning run or a jog or something like that, just to see the athletic facilities and see just what the buildings look like. Indiana, you know, IU's got their limestone buildings, but every campus is so different. But down here in Omaha, which is a really cool, smaller city, obviously TD Ameritrade Park kind of steals the headlines for we college baseball fans, but it's been neat over these last few years, and this trip included, to be able to walk around, go to some local restaurants and just kind of see what Omaha's about, because in maybe a more typical job, or maybe a job that doesn't travel, and going to places that I'd never go, you know, in any other profession. I don't think I'd go to Iowa City very often, but sure enough, I'm there once, if not twice, every year, and I've been able to go kind of associate myself with a different piece at every university, whether it's a restaurant or maybe something on campus. So it's really neat to be able to go see that. But as far as road trips are concerned, it's a lot of sitting around in the hotel, killing time, finding ways to eat up time, watching whatever's on TV, HBO movies, and then eating a lot of food. I feel like I'm always eating on the road.
That's good. What is one of your favorite cities to visit, maybe in the Big Ten, or if it's a non-Big Ten? Do you have one that you really look forward to making the trip?
I would say Iowa City. If I can see, just I had a good time going there, and I like the hotels that we stay at when we're in Iowa, and there's some cool restaurants nearby. Outside of the Big Ten, we went with women's basketball. We went to Auburn a couple years ago for just a regular non-conference game, and we stayed right there, maybe right outside campus, but right next to Toomer's Corner, and we were able to walk around. I took a morning run through through their campus, and I just thought Auburn was just beautiful outside. It was a beautiful day, of course, but saw the football stadium, the baseball field, and I texted Coach Cheeseboro while I was down there and took a picture of the field. I said, you got to get these guys on the schedule just so we can go down there and see that kind of ballpark. But I really enjoyed that campus. I think that one kind of stands out.
Did they replace those trees that were poisoned down there?
I think at that point in time when we went, the trees were gone, but I want to say maybe they had not a monument, but they had some sort of signage saying this is where they were, and maybe they had other trees there. But I saw where it all happened. We were actually there during the Iron Bowl that year. It was at Alabama, but right when we got to Auburn, all the guys were walking around, Auburn fans with their jerseys and all that stuff. I think Alabama beat the crap out of them that day, but it was kind of neat to watch that all happen.
Okay, so let's go back to Thursday night, and there's two outs in the bottom of the ninth, and not such a good outlook. We're down to our last out, a chance to tie it. What's going through your mind as soon as Gorski makes contact, and then how do you decide how you're going to call that?
Yeah, well, beforehand, I don't think I'm the only one here, but I had a feeling that it was going to be an early exit here in Omaha. Not that I'm making plans to get what I'm going to do all weekend when I get home, but, I kind of had in the back of my mind what a bummer it's going to be that you're probably going to go 0-2 here. And then when the ball's hit, I think I'm one of the few, but I didn't think it was out initially when he hit it. There was a ball the inning prior, I think it was Luke Miller, hit a ball to left center field that at the time when he hit it, I thought it was gone for I think it would have tied the game, but a home run, and he flew out to the warning track. And so when Matt hit his ball, it took me, it all happened so fast, but it took me a split second to recognize just how far that he hit that ball based off of his reaction and based off of the left fielder's reaction. And obviously, as the ball's going up, it kind of dawned on me that not only that's a home gone, and it lands in the top half of the bleachers at TD Ameritrade Park, which is no joke to hit one out there, especially once you get in between the gap signs, the 375. It's as pitchers friendly of a ballpark, and so to hit one out in general is impressive, but to hit one at that point in time and hit one that far from Matt Gorski was just an unbelievable play. And then obviously Wyatt ends it in the 10th with a little blooper down the left field line, but they get the job done, and fortunately allows us to stay and get us to where we're at right now.
So what other IU sports moments in your career stick out to you that you were actually broadcasting?
The first one I would say is probably my first year when we were here in Omaha at the Big Ten tournament. Indiana won the Big Ten tournament that year in 2014, hosted the regional, did all that with Schwarber and Travis and all that. But the Big Ten title game at TD Ameritrade Park was against Nebraska. And the fans, they do this in Lincoln, but I mean, they show out in by the thousands. And that Big Ten championship game had somewhere like 19,000-20,000 people in that TD Ameritrade Park. And that's something I won't forget. Even from the College World Series, which I wasn't there quite yet. I started the year after the World Series year. But being in that ballpark with nearly a full house, but everybody was rooting for Nebraska. And for that matter, everybody was rooting against Indiana in that game. And I just remember it was so loud. I think it was Casey Rodrigue had a ball go between his legs and made a big error, brought home a couple of runs for Nebraska. And it was midway point in the game, and the crowd just erupted. And that was a game I'll never forget, just the atmosphere and how cool it was. Of course, Indiana won the game, which certainly helped things as well. But that one certainly sticks out from a baseball perspective. I would say the walk-off home run, my first one that I got to call at any point in broadcasting, but was in Bloomington. Tony Butler hit a home run. I think it was to beat Indiana State a few years ago, and it was the first time I had ever called a walk-off home run. And so that was really neat. I've called a few walk-off hits, errors. I've had a walk-off balk in summer ball before that I was calling, which was quite odd, but the walk-off home run stands out.
Sorry to interrupt, but you do understand that our guy Chris Feeney yells balk every time someone throws, the opponent throws. So you just made his uniform. First, Lazy Mary was played last week,
yeah,
and he goes nuts, and now you actually had a balk off for a game?
It was a summer ball game in, I think it was in Battle Creek, Michigan, which is was during my, when I was a student, I had a summer internship calling games for that. And, you know, middle of July in a game that didn't mean all that much, both teams towards the bottom of the standings, but guy simply didn't come set, you know, just kept on going. Sure enough, the umpire called it. It was, I didn't really know what happened initially. I didn't notice, but, you know, I figured it out, watched the replay and all that stuff over the next few seconds and kind of recognized that it was very obvious, but yeah, balk to lose the game.
What IU moments have happened that you wish you would have called, and maybe that wasn't your sport? Have you ever thought about while you were a student or in the past? And do you ever dream about making huge calls?
No, I don't. More so, I don't know for IU. I mean, maybe I guess thinking just briefly, I was watching it as a student, but the watch shot to beat Kentucky. Thinking about maybe broadcasting that, what that would have been like, and different, I guess, IU men's basketball moments throughout the years that would have been so neat to be a part of. As far as dreaming, not really. I think I still, because of the playing days, every once in a while I'll have a dream where I'll be a player and maybe get a big base hit or something like that, but not so much on the broadcasting side, but maybe other major league games, I try, and whether I'm listening to it on the radio or watching on the MLB TV that we use, maybe trying to call one of those. And I'm a big Reds fan, so watching Reds games, they don't win all that much, but when they do, being a part of maybe that radio broadcast and see what that would be like. I guess that's more so what I would think about.
How far do you think this IU baseball team can go, and what do you think are some of their strengths and some of the things that they need to make sure they tighten up here as they go into tournament, the rest of this tournament and the NCAA?
Well, I think one of the bigger pieces to this IU team and what makes them good enough to make a deep run in a regional or win, you know, this Big Ten tournament or things like that, is that they're built with a different pitching depth than I think a lot of other teams. I think they have the ability in games 3, 4, 5, however long you'd have to play in the postseason, to still throw quality arms that can shut down even, you know, really good offense. And tonight, later today, in game 3 of this tournament, Indiana's throwing Timmy Herron, who's been, I would put Tim against any other 3, you know, in this Big Ten conference. And I think that's partially why Indiana's so good on Sundays, is that the drop-off from a John Stever on Friday to Paulie on Saturday to Tim on Sunday. And, I mean, you can throw in Beecham, Saul. I mean, there's so many different guys that you can throw out there that can still get the job done. Tim Herron's in the top 10 in the conference in earned run average and is pitching the best that he's thrown for Indiana. And then the back end, while they've gotten knocked around a little bit more than maybe we're used to lately, with a B.J. Sable and a Cal Kruger and a Matt Lloyd, who was really good yesterday, got the win. That's I think, as good in a small sample size as I've seen Matt on the mound in a long time, as he went pretty clean through Michigan State through that one inning. But there's just so many arms. I think so on that side, that gives them an advantage to make a deep run in a regional. Offensively, they can beat you in a lot of different ways, which helps. It's not that one guy that – can you always rely on to try and get the big base hit. Logan Kalitha's had a couple of walk-offs. Jeremy Houston at the 9 holes had a walk-off. Obviously, guys like Gorski yesterday, and, I mean, Wyatt Cross and Cole Barr were critical yesterday in that comeback win. They had Cole had an outstanding at-bat to get on base, stole second, and then Wyatt hit him in. And those are guys that didn't see the field until the 8th inning. So I think there's just so many different ways that they can beat teams. They can pitch shutouts. They can outslug you. They lead the conference in home runs. And so I think that sets up that even if somebody isn't having their best game, other people and other pieces to this roster can step up and help you out.
Well, we had the privilege of interviewing Bart Kaufman about a month ago, and we were very grateful for that. How much does Bart Kaufman Field, and now what we consider a really good fan base for a somewhat northern school, how does that help the baseball program? You were around when Sembauer was around, so you know the difference. What impact does that have, and then the newfound fans because of the park?
Yeah, Well, I think one big thing, and I think it speaks to the job that Tracy Smith did. Obviously, Chris Lemonis has done an outstanding job to keep things moving. But IU baseball is now, it's an event. It's something for fans around, the, you know, Bloomington, but up to Indy and really everywhere. People will come and see it. And obviously the success on the field has a lot to do with that, the new facilities and things like that. But it was a perfect storm, I think, when Bart Kaufman Field opened, that Indiana made it to the College World Series. Obviously, they were better and better and obviously had the big jump in 13 and been able to sustain a good amount of success since that time. But I think the facility helps with recruiting. It helps with fans. It's an arms race as far as, and this speaks to college athletics in general, as far as keeping everything up to date and making sure that these Big Ten schools have top-notch facilities. And you see, as Bart Kaufman Field's 6 years old now, that you still have to add the video board last year just to kind of keep pace and keep things fresh and keep things going. And I think that's going to continue to happen, in particular as the success is still there, that more and more money is being pushed into the Indiana baseball program, and they're able to extend and add certain aspects with the video board. And for fans, I mean, it's key for a team's success. You can't have a good baseball program without the fans, because – you can't have a good baseball program if you don't protect your home field and win home. Indiana's been really good for 6 years at Bart Kaufman Field. They're 21-5 this season. It's tough to win championships, whether that's the Big Ten regular season, whether you're hosting a regional and winning that. It's tough to do if you can't win at home, and it's hard to win at home when you don't have the fans. And that's why Indiana's a tough place to play. Even Nebraska, we went there. We went there to Lincoln a couple of weeks ago, and certainly by their standards, they're having a bit of a down year. But everybody knew going into that series that it's going to be really, really tough to win. And it's because the fans come out in good amounts. And Lincoln, simply put, is a very, very difficult place to play because of their fan base.
And we're getting close to wrapping it up. But what advice would you give to young people out there who might want to go into broadcasting, and maybe even an old guy who's just now starting podcasting? What kind of advice would you give?
Well, the first thing I tell students when I talk to them and things like that is to take advantage from a student perspective of the opportunities around Indiana and around the athletics with this Big Ten Student U and the student radio station. And there's so many different avenues that you can simply just get your feet wet and dive into it. And from this included, but for everybody, being able to talk behind the mic and in this case, talking into the computer and talk on the camera and things like that, the ability to gain experience, to me, is, it's not the only way, but it is the easiest and most effective way to get better, to get more comfortable, is simply getting reps. And so whether it's talking in a podcast, or, you know, you could turn on a baseball game on the TV, mute it, and just record into a computer, it's reps. And so I always preach to everybody that's asking for help on how to get better and things like that, is just, you have to go out and do it. And the more you do it, the more comfortable you'll get, and the more comfortable you are, the more you do it, the better you'll be.
And that's awesome. I help our students with podcasting and some of that video work, and we get better every time when you watch yourself and critique yourself and have an open mind and coach yourself. So I appreciate that, and we'll pass that on to my students as we help them. And then the last question I wrote to you, if you wanted to pick one of those three questions, or we could do rapid fire.
I got them. Let me look over here. I had them. I glanced at them.
You wanted to answer, or if you want to go through them all.
We can go through them all. That's fine.
Okay, let's go real quick. Do you have any superstitions for your broadcast?
No particular superstitions. From that perspective, I think I get more of a kick out of watching other people's superstitions, whether it's, you know, the rally caps on you when you need a big inning, you turn the caps backwards, or you have a certain handshake you do before every inning, or we had Roger on the radio with us in Lincoln, and he made some kind of comment that we stayed in a different hotel in Lincoln this time in 2018 when we went, because we got swept the last time we came in 2016. And so obviously the hotel had a lot to do with that. So we can't stay in the same spot naturally, but I just get a kick out of things like that. But for me, I don't have any particular superstitions, more of a routine maybe, but nothing quirky or anything like that, I don't think.
Very good. Now, this one's a shot in the dark. I think I might have seen you at a Clayton Anderson concert in 2017.
And that's a good show.
What is your favorite Clayton Anderson song? He's a big supporter of Indiana baseball.
Big supporter of IU baseball. I've seen him a few different times, so quite possibly you saw me at one of his concerts. I'm a big country music fan in general, and concerts are kind of one of my go-to things outside of work and things like that. I love going to summer country concerts and things like that. But I would say with Clayton, I'm a big fan of In the Dark. I think that's probably my favorite song of his. But now he puts on a terrific show. I love his support of the program. I've had him on the radio during a broadcast a couple of times. But yeah, I'd probably go with In the Dark.
All right, very good. And last, and you don't have to answer this because I don't want to ruffle any feathers, but what's your go-to restaurant in Bloomington?
You know, one aspect of Bloomington I do like, and it's like I think will kind of maybe please everyone, is that whatever kind of food you're looking for, there's a good food spot in Bloomington for that. You know, you have your wings place, you got your pizza place, you got everything like that. I would say if I'm picking a couple, I'll throw out a couple of them, not to upset anyone, I hope. But big fan of Mother Bear's, big fan of Nick's, big fan of the Tap, big fan of Buffalo's.
All right, very good. And we started another tradition with IUBase.com of Buffaloofies Fridays. So after Friday games, you're always welcome to come down and get a few wings and talk a little baseball. You know, we like to be friendly and have open invitations. Greg, it's been a privilege to talk to you. There's a lot that our IU baseball fan base can learn from you. We really appreciate your calls and your work and your dedication to Indiana University. And any thoughts on the rest of the Big Ten tournament? We'll try to get this published before the game, but any last thoughts?
Well, as we've talked about, I think Indiana's built to make a deep run, obviously to win the whole thing. A lot still needs to happen, and it could very well end tonight. It could end tomorrow. It could end Sunday. Hopefully I'm not in Bloomington for a while, or if I am, it's because things go well and we're back for the NCAA tournament. But I think I'm really excited. This is the best time to be a college baseball fan, player, staff member, you know, whatever it is. It's a great time for college baseball. Hopefully we can be back here in Omaha again, but certainly the Big Ten tournament. Love being here in Omaha and hope for a long weekend. But I appreciate you having me on and appreciate all your guys' support. You guys do an outstanding job.
Thank you very much. That'll do it for this special edition of Talking Hoosier Baseball. Please find future podcasts on Sports Talk with Tonsoni, which can be found on your favorite podcast source, as well as the Talking Hoosier Baseball tab on our website, iubase.com. Please follow iubase.com on Twitter at the handle at iubase17. This podcast, Talking Hoosier Baseball, on Twitter at the handle at CUatTheBart, and visit iubase.com to see other articles and other posts from our excellent group of our team. So for Greg Murray, iubase.com, I am Brian Tonsoni, wishing you all a great day. Go Hoosiers. To see my baby in her evening gown. And even